Welcome to Just Like Nana. So excited to have you here today. We're here today with Sarah Lindsay. Thrilled to be here with Sarah. She is a licensed marriage and family therapist. She works from a trauma-informed and relational perspective. Sarah loves working with people from all cultural backgrounds and is curious to understand and empower each unique cultural experience. She's passionate about understanding the mind-body connection and loves to integrate mindfulness into her work with clients to bring about deep healing and lasting change for the whole person. And we are lucky enough to talk with her today. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you.
So, Sarah, I'd love to start just by hearing, what's one of your favorite memories of or stories of your grandma or Nana?
This one was so hard because there are so many. But my sensory memory, like my body memory, goes straight to being in her orchid room. My grandmother grew orchids my whole life. And when I smell them, like when you go into the St. Paul Conservatory,
yeah,
that humid kind of tropical floral smell is what I think of. And it's what I associate with my safe place.
I love that. Do you grow orchids at all?
I do.
Aww.
Yeah. And it's a fun part of my therapeutic process with clients. Sometimes we repot them together. We learn about them together. And I always have them in my home, in my therapy office.
Yeah. Oh, that's amazing. So your grandma's just right there with you.
Always. Whether I'm aware of it or not, always.
Okay. Has your grandma passed?
She did about 10 years ago.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry for your loss, but I'm glad she's still here with you. And what did you call her?
I called her grandma.
Okay.
Yeah. I was intrigued and curious about what other people call their grandmothers.
Yeah.
I love to ask about grandmas in my therapy work.
Okay.
And I'm always curious what people call their grandmas. She was just grandma.
I love it.
Still is.
And for the listeners, she's actually here with us. So will you tell the listeners your grandma's name?
Yeah, Kathy O'Rourke. Kathy.
And we have a lovely picture of Kathy surrounded by her orchids here with us during the interview. So happy to have Kathy here as well. So welcome, Sarah and Kathy. I do want to talk kind of more generally about intergenerational trauma, how you incorporate discussions about that in your work. But you said something that intrigued me, which is that you feel like your grandma's part of your work every day. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think this starts with one of the most profound parts of my learning as a young therapist, which was a class I took where I had to journal about the prompt, "Who loved you into being?"
Oh.
And when I journaled, I surprised myself by writing about my grandma. I didn't consciously go into the field of therapy knowing I wanted to be like her, but really she influenced what I would call my relational template. She taught me so much about what it felt like to feel safe, to feel loved, to be really present in my body. And after doing that prompt, I set up my first therapy office with so many of her things because being surrounded by things that reminded me of her helped me feel present.
Oh, wow. That is beautiful.
And then it became conscious as I learned about generational trauma, but also generational healing. Now I intentionally surround myself with things that remind me of her or that are hers and talk to clients about grandma energy all the time.
Oh, that's amazing. Grandma energy. I love that. And I loved that prompt. Will you say it one more time?
Yeah, everyone should do it.
I know. It was immediately like, this is my journaling tonight.
Right at the top of your paper, who loved you into being?
Wow, that's beautiful. You know, sometimes we talk about ancestral trauma, intergenerational trauma, generational trauma, and we kind of focus on the nuts and bolts of energetically, here's how it gets passed down, or through what's triggered in your DNA line, here's what gets passed down. But I really love the idea of also talking about ancestral healing and what that means. And if you believe that healing kind of goes back and forth to descendants and to ancestors, and talking more about that today. So I'd love to talk about that. So let's start though with, what do you call it? Do you call it ancestral trauma? Do you call it intergenerational trauma? Do you use those terms interchangeably? And what does it mean to you as a therapist?
Great question. I usually refer to it as intergenerational trauma. And I recognize that most times I'm talking about this, I am introducing it to someone. Some people I find are very in touch with their lineage, and I might use the term ancestral trauma. Although I notice myself more often using intergenerational trauma and then using the word ancestor as a word that reminds them that people are at their back and a support word. So when I'm educating about this, I use intergenerational trauma.
Okay.
It's also easy for people to learn more about it using that term, searching, finding books.
This is Amy just intervening after my conversation with Sarah to call out this important note that she mentioned. Searching for intergenerational trauma often brings more research results than other types of searches.
I think what it means to me as a therapist, it's a deeper layer of trauma work. The first stage of trauma work is about resourcing clients. It's about making sure that before we dive in and go to the really hurt places, we're supported enough.
What are examples of, when you talk about resourcing, what are you looking for in the resourcing process?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, resourcing can be so different for each person, but resourcing, I think of first and foremost as relationally being resourced. So who are our safe people? The therapist is one, but I'm always curious who else they're in relationship with that is a resource to them.
Okay.
Especially when they're struggling. Building some skills around vulnerability, being able to access our relational resources.
Right.
Something I'm passionate about teaching is that co-regulation or regulating off of another person's regulated nervous system is by far the most efficient and effective way to regulate.
There will actually be someone on here whose life's focus in her work is, you know, nervous system and regulation and co-regulation. But if you don't mind talking about it just a little bit, because I'm just learning how, as humans, I think I always understood, okay, we need social connections, we need love, you know, just as much as we need food, water, and air. But I did not understand how actually our nervous systems co-regulate with others. Can you just talk about that a little bit and sort of explain that for the listener who maybe hasn't heard about that?
Yep. You know how you can feel someone's mood when they walk into a room?
Uh-huh.
Especially if you're highly sensitive, you know who you are if you're listening. You're easily swayed by people's moods, maybe highly sensitive to your environment. The idea is that our nervous systems have something called mirror neurons. And this is below our conscious awareness, but our moods, our mirror neurons are mirroring back what other people's nervous systems are giving off. And our nervous system is this, you know, our brain and body's way of detecting threat in our environment. And so there's a concept called psychological safety, which is that our nervous systems are not always just looking for physical safety. They're exploring the environment for relational safety all the time. So why we're drawn to people who feel grounded, receptive, right. Open. You know, people might say, you're so easy to talk to.
Yeah.
So as a therapist, so much of what's therapeutic about my work is focusing on my own regulation so clients can borrow my regulation when they're really overwhelmed.
Okay.
It might even allow them to process a really painful time or a really painful feeling and move through it for the first time.
Wow. That is a really powerful way to use some highly sensitive skills. So kudos to you. It can be tough as a sensitive person to understand how to control access to you and your output and what goes out and the energy that takes on your part. So I'm sure you also need a lot of resourcing.
I do, and a lot of co-regulation, which is why I see myself not as, you know, what's therapeutic about my work. You know, I'm co-regulating off of my grandmother and her energy the whole time I'm working. It's really important for me as a therapist that I see myself as co-regulated with all of my safe people while I'm in the room.
Yeah.
And it is less of a burden on my system.
Right. That's amazing. I do think too, you know, there's sort of a little bit of an American way of, you know, pull yourself up by the bootstraps and just get over it and those types of kind of sayings. And I think it's clear, but just to say it out loud, Just Like Nana is not about, you know, wallowing or blaming or anything like that, but it is about seeing, acknowledging, learning, and figuring out how you as an individual move on from there with that information.
I really appreciate you naming that, because people might ask me, why should I care about intergenerational trauma or the past stuff? That'll just make me feel worse. And what I like to explain is a definition of trauma that not everyone understands or has heard, which is that trauma is often not the capital T, big T event.
Right. Like an airplane crash.
Right. Or an assault or something, you know, maybe that we know happened. Right. It's not the one bad thing that happened. The trauma usually occurs because there's a lack of a compassionate witness.
Oh, yeah.
We are so resilient as a species, including psychologically and relationally, but past generations often didn't talk about it or weren't regulated around it. That's why two people who go through the same experience, one can leave traumatized and the other not.
Okay. Because the other has the compassionate witness.
If someone has a compassionate witness, for example, a child has a regulated adult who is saying to them, the divorce was so painful. This has been so painful. This is so hard for you. I'm right here. Who's regulated enough to be attuned to the child's experience.
Right.
Then the child might be able to process the trauma while it's happening. And that is kind of an unburdening.
Yeah.
Where trauma sticks in the body.
Right.
When it is too much, too big, too scary, too confusing to process the information while it's happening.
Okay. And then you don't have that regulated, safe person to process with afterwards.
Exactly. Ideally, we have a compassionate witness during.
Okay.
So ideally, for example, you know, a divorce can be a trauma, right?
Yes.
That's not a single event. It takes a long time. If we have someone telling the truth about how hard it is while it's happening,
yeah,
that helps us digest it. It helps us process. You've probably heard the term unprocessed trauma.
Right.
Or I am processing my trauma in therapy.
Yeah. What does that mean?
It doesn't just mean talking about it. It means talking about it while somebody is attuned enough to be mirroring back the emotions.
Okay.
You can imagine that a child goes through a divorce and both parents are very dysregulated and the child feels very emotionally alone. That their feelings aren't invited. No one is saying, honey, how is this for you? This has felt so chaotic. There's so much change. You must feel so sad and confused.
Right.
If no one's doing that, you know, the person might come to me for therapy as an adult and they're struggling in their relationships or their depression. Could show up so many ways, right?
Yeah.
And what we do is they get to tell the story and we pace it. We go slow. So when my nervous system detects that they activate, they get stressed, they get scared, I pause them and we slow down with the feeling together.
Okay.
They might realize I felt so lonely, and then we slow down with loneliness and my system mirrors that back to them.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden we're digesting the loneliness in a safe enough way because there's someone there with them in the lonely.
Wow. That is so powerful. And I want to be clear, and I don't think you're saying this, but just to be clear to listeners, no one's bashing divorce. Sometimes it's the best option, or anything else that might happen. Life happens. And I think it's not so much the event itself as how the event is processed. Is that fair?
Exactly. And I'm glad you said it, because I have many clients who maybe went through their parents divorcing who that's not a trauma. At all. It could be a protective factor. So divorce is just a change in the family.
Right.
It's a change in the family that can, for some people, yeah, certainly be what's best, especially if we're talking about it.
Right.
And it's a really good example of how changes in families can, again, yeah, either be traumatizing, not traumatizing. It really isn't about the content.
Okay.
Right? It's really about the process.
Yeah.
We feel seen.
Okay. Wow. I did too, just getting back to kind of that American way of, you know, pull yourself up and those sorts of things. What I'm really starting to appreciate. And my listeners know I am not, I'm not you. I'm not a professional. I am not a mental health professional. This is, you know, what I've learned is just through my own reading, my own processes. And so I'm not offering advice, but just reflecting on my own experience. What I really appreciate about understanding the nervous system more is to appreciate its awesome power. The entire purpose of your nervous system is to keep you alive and safe. And so to think, gee, I'm going to fight against that, it just helps put in perspective so much how incredibly powerful and skilled our nervous system is at taking care of us. And I don't know if that resonates with you, if you want to speak to that.
It's so powerful, right?
Yeah.
It is. It's amazing. You know, one note I'll say on this is that the nervous system has so many functions, right? It's like when you go to touch a hot stove, your hand pulls away before you can think it.
Uh-huh.
The nervous system is always working for us.
Right.
Trying to protect us from threats, and it remembers if there was a threat before.
Yeah.
It doesn't forget. It does it for us.
Yeah.
Which sometimes, you know, is usually it's adaptive, meaning that it keeps us alive. And then sometimes it becomes maladaptive if we find safety.
Mm-hmm.
Our
right.
nervous system, you know, might say, oh, that person's in a bad mood, and it thinks it's the hot stove. Pull away. That's scary. Not okay.
Yeah.
When in fact, you know, we might be in a safe, secure relationship and our partner's just in a bad mood. Right?
Right.
It's not the, you know, it's not, the really neglectful parent or something who never right. attuned to us.
Yeah.
And so understanding the nervous system is really powerful for helping us orient to our environment now.
Okay.
It's so protective. It's so smart.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes a little too good.
Okay.
Job.
Yeah. And I think how we sort of, I don't want to say get around that, but what's important for us is to see what's happening, to acknowledge it, to appreciate, you know, instead of fighting against, that's so stupid, you know, that's not happening now, just acknowledge, wow, you're trying to keep me safe. Thank you for that. And here's kind of working through, here's why I feel resourced enough for this, or here's why it's not a threat.
Mm-hmm. You're describing self-soothing.
Mm, yeah.
That's right. Our nervous system's our friend. Befriend it. When I say that, I imagine, you know, putting a hand on your chest. Thank you.
Right.
Right. Thank you, body, for keeping me alive. Thank you for protecting me. Our nervous system and tending to that is a great way to practice self-soothing.
Okay.
Appreciating our body.
Right.
How much it's working for us. When we resist it, right, the patterns persist.
Yeah.
When we resist it, our body feels like it needs to keep on guard.
Right.
Keep protecting us.
Okay. This seems like a really good way to transition into, let's talk about intergenerational trauma and how, just sort of how you perceive it. I mean, does it live in our body? Is it energetic? You talked about like unprocessed trauma. Can that pass down a familial line? Just all of the questions. How do you see it?
Yeah, well, I think it's epigenetic. So genes can get turned on or off, expressed or not. And so trauma changes the brain and it changes it lives in our nervous systems, right?
Right.
It's very clear to me as someone who's trained as a marriage and family therapist and who has studied systemic, well, everything systemic. So the way family systems work, mm-hmm. how trauma is systemic.
Okay.
That you'll see we parent the way we were parented.
Mm.
Unless yeah. we actively disrupt it.
Right.
Right? That's what our body knows. This is one of the ways that trauma is passed down. Right. If you think about neurons and neural connections in the yeah. brain, we are always learning. And the way we are parented becomes our template for how we parent.
Okay.
Very in the brain.
Right.
Unless we do some active rewiring. And it's
exactly.
hard. But you can see in marriage and family therapy, sometimes we say it takes 3 generations to break a family cycle.
Wow.
I like repeating that to clients because it helps us be kind to ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Some people might say, I'm a cycle breaker. You know, I was abused. I really don't want to abuse my children. And I will remind them that they are in charge of breaking what is possible to break in 1 generation.
Right.
We can't heal it all at once. And
yeah.
maybe our parents broke some cycles too. Right. Can be interesting to look back and see, you know, maybe they passed on some trauma. Hey, maybe they also broke a few cycles.
Yeah, exactly. I see that just even so. I have triplets and they're now 25 years old. And it's so interesting to think about how much I wanted to be absolutely the best mom they could have. And I can look back, right, 25 years and see I was not in the same place with my healing that I am now. And in fact, when they were 3 years old is when I really started to appreciate, wait a minute, maybe I have some value as a person, because I could see things in them that I just loved and adored. And I realized, hang on, I'm their mom. I'm their primary caregiver. Maybe some of this is a little bit of a reflection on me. I don't want to take away from, you know, they had their own shining spirits and everything.
Wait a minute. You get to give yourself some credit. And it's important. That's part of breaking generational cycles is celebrating. Celebrating is as important, if not more important, than grieving.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So please do celebrate.
Okay.
What you parented.
Yeah.
Please do celebrate what you noticed you enjoyed in them.
Right. Right. Well, thank you for that. I love that. And the point is, you know, so we fast forward and it turns out potentially there are still some issues to work through. And that's okay, because I always think, you know what? They're farther along than I was at that same time. So I so appreciate the idea of it takes a while and sort of that compassion for yourself, doing the best you can as a parent and recognizing that those before you probably did the best they could as well. That doesn't excuse some behavior, but you can kind of breathe a little bit when you just recognize they were a human doing the best they could.
Right. And the extent to which we humanize ourselves is the extent to which we humanize other people.
So yeah.
We have to humanize ourselves.
Right.
Yes, there's still issues to work through.
Right.
We're human. Every generation has issues that the last didn't. There is this illusion of control in parenting. You know, my kids are 3 and 5, and I'm a therapist, so I thought, oh, I've got it. Everyone listening's laughing, right? Because they're like, yeah, you have all these grand hopes for parenting, and then so much of your own stuff is brought to the surface.
Right.
And behavior change is not the way we heal trauma. It actually can make it worse. That's why doing cognitive behavioral therapy or therapies that are solely focused on top-down processing or about like learning and intellectualizing and making changed behavior
right.
can make it worse, because we're not tending to our nervous system. And that can create more dissonance and more shame when we don't behave the way we had hoped.
Okay. So we have an idea in our head, but it's not happening. And now we've got a bigger gap there.
That's right. And yeah, we feel worse about ourselves, don't we?
Yeah.
We're harder on ourselves.
So let's talk about that. Let's talk about the trauma in the body, how that sort of, you started to talk about epigenetics, the behavior, the sort of parenting modes. How does that live in your body and what do you do to start to heal?
I've been using the language lately, sensory memory. So sensory memory, I would describe as the felt knowing in the body and how much felt safety
okay.
you feel.
Yeah.
Or that's the way I'm utilizing it. Sensory memory. Everybody can relate to having a smell, like the first day of school.
Sure.
Or grandma's perfume. For me, it's the orchid room. There's a smell right. that can make you feel calm and safe inside or nervous. Our bodies are always taking in information.
Yeah.
And utilizing that information to find psychological safety or detect threat. And so when I think about trauma in the body and how it lives there, a lot of it lives there as sensory memory.
Okay.
We might not be conscious of it, but what we can work on without even knowing what the content of the trauma is.
Uh-huh.
For example, you know, there's plenty of trauma that's passed down that we've never heard the story about. We don't right. always know what lives in our body.
Exactly.
You know, the gift is that we don't have to know the content. What we can do is tend to the body, tend to the triggers, tend to the areas of stress, and find psychological safety or engage the senses to find safety now.
Okay.
One of my favorite ways to do that is a very good friend and colleague introduced this to me. She brings giant rocks back from Lake Superior.
Oh.
And by giant, I mean just like a large rock you could put in your lap.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow.
And when a client is starting to dissociate,
uh-huh.
her nervous system's highly attuned to this and might pick up that the person is starting to get a little floaty.
Yeah.
Or go into their head. I've done a lot of energy work on myself, and I can tell because I start not feeling my legs as much when a client is beginning to dissociate a bit because of an uncomfortable experience.
Okay.
And I'll hand them a rock, a giant rock that they put on their lap.
Yeah.
And we will slow down with whatever the content is and help the body anchor in safety again.
Okay. Wow. That is powerful. I so appreciate knowing that you don't need to know every detail to foster healing for yourself and for future generations. You can work through the senses in the body.
Absolutely. Especially with a skilled practitioner. When I think about how people could access healing, I think having a therapist who is trauma-informed, especially someone who understands somatics. Every trauma-informed practitioner should understand somatics, but somebody who feels, you know, really grounded in their skills with that can really help. Because from my perspective, the most important thing about healing trauma, two things. One is the somatic embodied work.
Okay.
And then the other one is the relational container. It is having someone guide you. Because we can know all these things.
Right.
But I still go to my own therapist for support with my own trauma work.
Okay.
Right? Because I still need to co-regulate. You know, when you get really skilled, you might build a relationship to, for me, it's a willow tree.
Oh,
grandmother willow tree. And
right.
I can co-regulate with the trees now, which is cool.
Yeah, that is amazing.
You know, nature's a powerful regulator.
Yeah.
You know, we've in Western society really lost some of our relationship to nature.
Yes.
My grandma taught me a lot about that. But I find that if you can't access that, starting with a really attuned therapist.
I'll just freely confess, I love trees. When I'm on hikes, I will, not every tree, because it's not possible, but I will stop and just sometimes spend 30 seconds to a minute just touching a tree and being appreciative for its existence. It is unbelievably calming. I also think, I realize that access to nature is different for everyone, but one piece that I think is accessible to most anyone is just being barefoot on the earth.
Yes.
It's amazing.
Well, and that's sensory memory.
Mm.
I wonder how long that goes back.
Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm. Wow. That really felt really powerful to me. I got a huge chill when you said that. I just thought I enjoyed it, but yeah.
No, your body remembers.
Right.
That it belongs there. When our feet touch the earth.
Okay.
And in our world, there's so much of the time our feet touch socks.
Yes.
And shoes and carpets.
Yeah. And concrete.
Concrete. Right?
Right.
But it is a powerful reminder of belonging.
Yeah. That's beautiful. So when you're talking about, you know, I'll just use myself as an example. I might be experiencing something in my body that is related to a trauma that my great-grandma experienced. Why is it in my body? Like, why am I feeling it? Why is it hurting me? Why is it there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in our field, we say pain runs through families until someone is ready to feel it. I would actually shift that now to maybe say pain runs through families until someone is resourced enough to feel it.
Yeah.
Because someone might be ready and under-resourced.
Right.
Someone might want to. And can't. And so that's why it's such a gift and a privilege to do my work, to co-regulate with people, you know, where we are creating the safety to feel it through the pain. It's in your body because maybe there was so much else happening,
right?
That that pain didn't get resolved before that person passed. Their body did not find safety and confusion with that suffering.
Okay. And it could have been, I mean, with my mom, but she wasn't resourced enough. And, you know, so it just kind of keeps traveling.
Yeah. And we don't have to know where it began.
Right.
There are so many pains that I don't think we ever will know when they began. Mm-hmm. You know, when we look into our ancestry, I'm Irish. very Irish. And yeah, I think about genocide or famine. These are huge collective, like large traumas to a people.
Yes.
And how some of that, right? Of course, it can't be digested in one generation.
Right.
Right. And that part of my work to honor my ancestors is to continue. Right.
Yeah.
Some of the healing. Yeah.
That's really powerful. It's beautiful. I am sure they appreciate it.
Yeah, it's fun to connect with them and, you know, to think about still being in relationship, right?
Yeah.
To ancestors. Also forward thinking about my children and my children's children.
Right.
And this is also a reason that I heal.
Yeah, absolutely. I do a lot for grandbabies that I don't yet have. I don't have any. Yeah.
And you have a relationship with them.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
May we all be in relationship to the future children.
Right.
Ones that are ours and not ours.
Yeah.
All be in relationship to the future children of the world in a way that we would heal for them.
I'm about to cry because how much better would the world be? Yeah.
This feels like a really important time to slow down with that.
Right.
There's a lot of tears.
Yeah.
About how much collective grief there is and how we need to really recenter our children.
Yeah. Thank you for that. I'm going to ask you to go back just, you know, I think we all hear a lot about somatics, but what does that mean to you when you say that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's so many different somatic modalities. To me, what it means is being in touch with, it's something called interoception. It's our ability to be in touch with what's happening internally in our body. So somatics is not just about the act of doing something with our body,
like tapping or something.
Like tapping or yoga or anything we could do to move our or stimulate our bodies. But it's really about noticing when we become dysregulated and then bringing our body to safety.
Okay.
Most people have heard of the fight, flight, and freeze responses in the body, these primitive nervous system, you know, responses to threat. And somatic work often starts with people who are having big dysregulations. You know, that might be their complaint when they come to therapy. I have panic attacks.
Oh, sure.
We can use somatic interventions like, you know, deep breathing is a really common one. I'm not advocating for that as the only tool to calm a panic attack. No. I would actually much prefer someone gets skin to skin in bed with their partner, actually, and snuggle.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
That's a really powerful somatic intervention.
Okay.
You know, if you haven't slept naked with your sweetie lately,
right,
get in bed and cuddle up with them. It can also look like, you know, being skin to skin with a child, even letting our body co-regulate with another regulated being.
Yeah.
But as we get deeper into somatic work, we're able to start noticing when our body is starting to leave. It's not just when we hit a panic attack. It might be, oh, I'm a little bit less grounded. I'm a little more floaty. I'm a little overwhelmed. I need to slow down.
Right.
It's kind of like a light switch and turning it into a dimmer switch. So the light switch of, you know, dysregulation, I'm on. I'm activated. I can't slow down. I'm not in my body.
Yeah.
Or off, you know, I crash at the end of the day and I fall asleep and I'm totally gone.
Right.
But it's learning that dimmer switch.
Okay.
And how it feels in the body to be kind of all these different levels of grounded or dysregulated.
That's amazing. As the owner of a dog and six cats, I assume animals help us co-regulate. I shouldn't even say I know they do.
They so do. There is this great video. It's this video of this person who is going to give this other very sad person a hug. And you watch all the sadness kind of visually enter the person who has hugged.
Yeah.
And then it's kind of goes along, you know, this person is now sad and someone else cares for them. And then you end up with a person who's just full of sadness.
Right.
They go home to their dog and all the sadness drains away from both of them. Because
I love it.
Definitely co-regulate with animals.
Yeah. And they're good at not taking on our junk. They just sort of disseminate it for better, higher use.
Yeah, we are so lucky to have them.
Yeah.
They, you know, they're not stuck in the past or the future like humans are,
right?
Which can make it so hard to find people who are a safe place to co-regulate with.
Yes.
Because maybe their stuff gets triggered.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I even think of, you know, when you talk about partners, there's so much history there. And so, yeah, it can be difficult for that partner to stay anchored in the now. They're either thinking of, you know, well, what's this stemming from? Did I do something? That sort of thing. Or they're thinking of the future and your relationship. So,
you know, in this vein, one thing I would say is that we can also co-regulate with someone who has passed.
Mm.
So I am co-regulated with my grandmother right now, which feels really nice.
And yeah.
I am most well when I am co-regulated to her energy.
Okay.
So I think about spiritual practices to be connected to spirit also.
Yeah.
Right. And that helps unburden our marriages,
our
close relationships. I sometimes think of it like a stool. The more legs, the sturdier it is.
Yeah.
Our partner can't be the only person we co-regulate with.
Right.
It's too much. Right?
Yeah.
Too much pressure.
Yes.
And so our children even are healthier when we are co-regulated with more people that we experience relational safety with.
And I will say for the listeners, you know, Sarah started with telling us about her grandma Kathy and how close they were. And it's beautiful that you can co-regulate with her. And some people might think, that kind of makes sense. You know, that was your safe person. I will say I've told the story of my Nana Betha, who was my fifth great grandmother, so never knew her. And I often, as I'm meditating, she's a safe kind of higher self for me, a mother figure that is very real and present to me. And it's a relationship that I didn't have here on this earth, but that I still found a way to connect to. So I think there's a lot of richness there and a lot of variety in co-regulating with people who have passed.
I'll often ask people to imagine who's behind them, right?
Like,
who's at your back?
Yeah.
And it sounds like Betha is at your back.
Yeah. It's been fun getting to know her. I'm curious about, you know, some of our listeners might want to learn more about their family and more about their ancestral stories and their family stories. It sounds like that's not maybe totally necessary to generate healing for yourself and moving forward. But if someone wants that, I guess, do you see any drawbacks to that? And what approaches do you recommend with older family members if you want to hear?
As you were saying that, I was thinking about how important it is for me to tell people that you don't always have to know the content.
Uh-huh.
And on the other side of that same coin is sometimes there's so much happening in the body that having some content and knowing some of what's going on is really helpful for healing.
Right? Right. Yeah.
So I would never tell somebody that has no family alive that we couldn't heal because they don't have anyone to ask. And I also frequently recommend that people talk to their family. Right? And ask some hard questions. Well, one thing I would say I recommend is having a relational session with a therapist. This isn't accessible to everyone and it is not necessary. And it can be really powerful.
Yeah.
To have a container, a place where somebody else is guiding the questions. I, as a therapist, I frame it relationally. So I say, hey, you're here. Talk to me about your relationship with each other.
Yeah.
It's hard often. Uh-huh. It's very intimate to talk about your relationship, especially when it hasn't always been smooth.
Right.
And can be very healing to reflect on the relationship.
Yeah. I can also see that as feeling a little bit safer to the person of whom the questions are being asked. Because even if you have a really soft approach with someone in an older generation in your family, I can understand how to them it might feel, I don't want to use the word attack, but maybe even, you know, as extreme as an attack, or they might have their own pain and shame around that story and feel like you're kind of agitating it. There's just a lot going on. So I can see how helping that person feel as safe as they can could be really conducive to a conversation that gives you information.
Well, and sometimes we're regulated enough to do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
To accommodate their nervous system.
Yeah.
Right? Because if they do feel attacked, they haven't healed.
Right.
And that's so common.
Yeah. So our,
of course, generation is doing a lot more therapy than a past generation.
Right.
You know, or I specifically think about people who've been disconnected from culture. because of colonization, or I think about a lot of white bodies, you know, people I work with who don't feel any connection to culture.
Sure.
And without therapy, this kind of like Western healing modality that I try to practice a decolonized version of, without that, and also without connection to your culture and some of these somatic or sensory practices of being in community, being in nature, doing ritual, without these things accessible to us, how are we supposed to heal?
Yeah.
So there's a lot of people I'm talking to now whose the last two generations didn't get to heal. It's a lot of pain.
Right.
A lot of surviving.
Yes.
And if we're regulated enough, if we've done enough of our own therapy and we've decided, or our own healing, and have decided, you know, I'm going to have this conversation coming from a place of curiosity. That's one really good way to know if you're regulated. Can I be curious? And if we can't, I recommend having another person in the room.
Yeah.
Your spouse, a sibling, someone who you can co-regulate with.
Okay.
To slow yourself down while you ask the questions from a place of curiosity.
Okay. Well, I could talk to you for hours, but I'm trying to be respectful of your time. So everything we discuss, we will link in the show notes. There's a lot here. And hopefully people have some ideas. What are some first steps that you would recommend if someone's interested in further exploring this intergenerational trauma, how it might relate to their own sort of well-being at this point?
Doing some journaling is one really nice place to start.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes just slowing down with our intuition and what our body already knows can be a great lead. Start with the journal prompt, who loved you into being, and go from there.
Love that.
I also have found that energy work has been really powerful for me. And so any kind of body-based energy work, like craniosacral work, intuitive energetics, Reiki, any of these somatic kind of our energy modalities can be really helpful to get us into our body.
Okay.
And I find that once we start getting into our body, there's a lot of good questions that emerge, or knowings that emerge.
Right.
And the better we can know ourselves, you know, the better we can find the right people to support us.
Yes. Yeah. I love that. That is all amazing. How can people find out more about you, follow you, work with you? Tell us about that.
On my website, which is asyouaretherapymn.com, my business partner, Adam, and I do a lot of work with relationships and individuals in the Twin Cities. Books are currently full, but starting to keep a wait list for folks who really want to hang around until there's an opening to do the work. But also, I have a different role that I play, which is helping connect people with the right therapist. This has become a passion area for me because I love it when people have experiences that feel really attuned and healing for them. And I can't spread myself, you know, too thin.
Sure.
So my business partner and I host events about once a month called Therapy on Tap. We show up at local breweries with therapists with openings.
Oh, fun.
Just as an accessible kind of community gathering place for people to come and meet therapists and interview people to see if they could be a good fit. There's a tab on my website about that.
Okay.
My business partner and I share some content on our Instagram and Facebook, As You Are Therapy.
Wonderful.
And then my dear colleague, Salaha of Cattail Therapy, her and I also just opened a new space in Minneapolis by Lake Hiawatha, and it is full of grandma energy. It is also the place that I did a decade of mentorship with my first therapist and mentor, who is now retired.
Oh, wow.
But lots of elder energy and ancestral energy in that space. And we, we'll have some openings for new clients, but also we're piloting kind of a new model right now where people can come and use our therapeutic art and sensory room as a way to co-regulate to the healing work between sessions. So another third space where people can come and be and do their art or journal or sit and have a cup of tea. And, you know, my place was grandma's living room. And so now I've done my best to create that for everybody to come use.
Oh, wonderful. Well, I'm absolutely going to check that out because that sounds amazing. You know, when you talk about the grandma energy and the elder energy, and sometimes we're talking about, you know, there was a focus on survival, because there had to be, and maybe some unresolved trauma. But I always like to be really clear at Just Like Nana, that doesn't mean they were weak or somehow doing less than we're doing because we're exploring it. It really, we're able to explore it because of what they did for us. And their energy, wisdom, power, just based on what they've been through, can just be an incredible resource. So kudos to the grandmas.
Kudos to the grandmas, yes. And all of the generational gifts that we have also inherited.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
So excited you were here today. Thank you so much for listening. I would love to hear your story. If you're interested in sharing it, please go to justlikenana.com to submit your story. There are also resources there if you're interested in learning more about discovering your ancestry or breaking some trauma cycles in your family. I have an ask of you. If you enjoyed today's show, I would love if you subscribed and let a friend know they might enjoy it as well. Talk to you again next week. Can't wait. Just Like Nana's theme song was written and performed by Carter Penny.